Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Hi, everybody. It's me, old J.R.Y.
Gentlemen, I have a topic I'm going to jump right in with. And this is a thing I think about a lot when I'm in the middle of working on stuff or I get things done, but I realize they're not done. If I write a book, problem is you write a book and then you're like, oh, but there's a lot of other things you need to do. You need to edit a book, put together a cover, you need to do that. Or if you're the publisher, you have to go through the rounds of editing and promotion and that. Or if, let's say, like I have a new magic trick coming out, which I talk about on Weird Things, something called Clueless. And it's like, oh, I got the trick. I got everything that works for it. I figured out how I'm going to make it. But then I'm like, oh, I need envelopes. I need this. I need all that. And kind of my theory, it's kind of like 10% is actually the 90%. And that you think the thing is done, and then we get discouraged when we realize there's a lot more things that need to get done before it's really done. And with experience, you get used to that, but a lot of times we step into endeavors. It's like, we're like, I want to make a podcast. You're like, okay, first sit down and record it. Well, you record it, and you're like, now what? Oh, I need to edit it. I need to maybe add bumpers to it. I need to upload it to an RSS feed. I need to do maybe some show notes descriptions of it. And I think that I would say that 90%, a lot of stuff that we give up on and people drop out of is because they find out the real work is not like – it's one thing to get over the idea of like I just – you know, the trophy mentality. I just want this because I want the trophy. I want the thing that I want people to congratulate me for it. Like I want to write a book because I want to hold up a book and say, look, I wrote a book.
Right.
It's another thing to realize – but once you get past that and say, okay, I know I need – the writing's where it's at or the doing a lot of episodes where it's at. But it's all the other work that I think it's discouraging.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't know, to borrow from the, you know, the 80-20 rule or whatever, it's like 80% of the excitement is 20% of the job. And that means the other 80% of the job is not real sexy, not very exciting, not very fun. There are ways to get something out of it. Strangely, one of my favorite things in the earliest days of trying to sell, you know, my magic show is like I would look for what I thought of as an anchor date. I would want, you know, let me just get one university to say the words, we're probably going to book you, you know, November 20th in Atlanta, Georgia. So now because I had a date where I was going to – I could say legitimately I'm in the area, and this all seems ridiculous in the age of the internet, but I would print out I would assemble a list of 2,000 nightclubs that were within a 4 to 6 hour drive of that place, going at yellowpages.com, cutting and pasting and hand assembling. I would use scripts to like – okay, replace all of the commas with semicolons and now add these spaces and all that stuff so I could print them all out. And then I would sit and I would stamp all those so that on top of this, you know, $1,000 college show, I could maybe book two $500 college or nightclub shows during that same time. And I guess I have fond memories of it because it was something I did with Bonnie and, you know, we would sit and watch movies while we were doing it. But it is astonishing how tedious that extra and yet very, very important work is.
But it's only astonishing because of what you pointed out, which is that we have value in certain elements and we don't have value in others, right? If Andrew wants to write a book, he wants to write the best book he possibly can based on his experience with reading books and his knowledge of what books sell and stuff like that. And is now that he's further along in his career, the feedback that he has from either people close to him or the audience at large. But there are some that don't want any part of that. That's terrifying, but they love the idea of salesmanship and they love the idea of doing all this. There's like, we all, I think, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's just, in fact, it can be a very, very good thing if we understand it within ourselves. What do we value? We're going to want to spend the time we take to spend on that will fly by far faster than us doing the stuff that we don't either deem as important or we have deemed ourselves not good at it. And who knows whether or not we are. It sure certainly feels like it takes a lot longer and it's a lot more annoying to do it.
I look at how I've gotten better in some areas, but still when it comes down to kind of doing the work though, like I wrote the sequel to Station Breaker almost a year ago, right? And I'd be like, when's the sequel coming out? I still have not sat down to edit that thing. And now I'm going into this kind of window of where like, oh, well, I've got my book coming out. I've got Blackfall coming out in March. I can't really release it around there, and I don't know if I really want to put another thriller book right out there. And so maybe there's this sort of window in the summer where I won't interfere with my Thomas and Mercer release, and I put myself in this position because I got lazy. I just got this – the writing it was fun. The writing it was a blast, but then I didn't do the follow-through on the rest of it, which – you know, would have been, you know, a few days worth of work, which I always had a justification for do this other thing, do this other thing. But I could have had 4 days. I could have had 4 days a couple months ago to have done that, and I didn't. Now I'm sitting on a property that could be bringing in money, be useful to me, but I've kind of put myself in this weird little corner.
Yes and no. I mean, certainly you're sitting on something of value, but the value that it has is directly dependent on you know, when the release window is. I mean, I don't think if Harper Lee's second book came out, you know, within a week after To Kill a Mockingbird, it would have done quite as well, you know.
Well, certainly, but I think Andrew's saying that there was a spot earlier, but he didn't do it because it was annoying.
There was a number of spots. I just got lazy and didn't do it. And by the way, Harper Lee's last book, Ghost Set a Watchman, cover designer, same cover designer as my last book with HarperCollins.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. New book, different cover designer, but still. Fun little connections there. I was saying that, yeah, I got lazy and I missed a window because it was I didn't want to do the work. I didn't want to go do that. I had fun writing it. I actually started writing the third one, but I didn't want to jump in and do the edit. And then I kind of like, I missed an opportunity. You know, I missed, you know, that, you know, the money from that would have been, you know, could have been a, you know, Model 3 down payment, you know, or maybe buy some iTunes music for a Model 3. point is that I, on one hand, I think I am extremely driven in many ways. I think that I'm an extremely productive person, and people see the external output from me. They see a lot of stuff. But we don't realize is there's a tremendous amount of procrastination. And if I followed through on, you know, followed through 50% more on some of these things that I got to that the theoretical imaginary 90% level, I'd have a lot more out there. So I'm better at it, but I still suffer from it.
Well, you know, I think part of it is also getting rewiring yourself to get addicted to real completion as opposed to the partial completion, which I know is something that is a big problem for me, is telling people that I'm doing something or I'm going to do something or I'm in the process of something or like sharing a half finished thing with somebody is that very often I just kind of punch out on the fact that people are happy that I'm doing a thing and then I don't do it or I don't do it well. Thankfully, a lot of the projects over the last, year have kind of taught me is that the even if it's scarier going forward, if you can do something successful it's better. It's better to devalue the credit that you get while making it, even from your own self, so you can make it toward the end. But that's not a simple thing. You know, it takes a while. It took me. I mean, it still takes me wild to do a lot of things. I know I'm in a place right now with like the sticker stuff that I started last year. You know, it was a fun little side project and I liked doing it and I liked, you know, buying art from people and putting it on stickers and selling it and building up the mailing list. But now I'd always told myself last year, I'm like, okay, well, last year it's establishing it, just making sure that everybody knows that this exists and I, you know, I figure out how to plug it and I figure out how to sell it. And now we take the next step in the next year. Except I have not done that, you know, and it's like, okay, well, I set myself up for this, but now I have to do bigger, scarier things, like figuring out like, okay, well, are there products that aren't stickers, you know, to sell? Like, is there something like that we can go forward with? So it's like, it's rough. It's hard to do, and it really takes kind of constant vigilance to keep yourself moving forward.
I have a little theory, and I want to ask Brian and see if this supports this or not. Brian, your model of when you were writing off to the clubs and talking to them and saying, do you want to book me, where did that come from?
That's a really good question. It came directly from C.J. Johnson, who was developing a lot of his direct marketing through a system that Dan Kennedy put together back in the late 90s. And it's it's hard for people to even imagine what it took to reach out to people 20 years ago in a pre-internet era.
So a lot of my drive when it comes to my books, and it comes from like my promotion on my books and all that, came from watching Rand Woodbury. Rand Woodbury was much like CJ was to you. And Rand gave me my first email list. Rand, you know, showed me how he did like his advertising in Magic Magazine or whatever. And he learned from, you know, guys like Paul Osborne and stuff. And I would say that some of the things that I do are the hardest things for other people to follow through were things that I learned from somebody else and watching somebody else do.
And I would absolutely say I can tell you, you know, like, oh, well, all you have to do is send out this many postcards. They're 25 mm-hmm. cents a piece. You send out 3,000 of them at a 1% response rate. That's, you know, 90 calls you're going to get. You're going to land 2 gigs out of that, and that'll pay for the whole thing, right?
Magic book, you know, Solo X, I sent out postcards to everybody on a list that Rand gave me. It was like people who bought Magic books. I sent out physical postcards, new book coming out from Andrew Main, blah, 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 blah. Here's the description. Sat down at a table and did like you did. And that was it's one of these things. It was a very physical thing that I did and a physical thing that you did that we learned from somebody else. And that's just, it's a very interesting thing.
Well, I guess my point is you and I had the benefit of speaking to people who we could not argue about why it wasn't going to work. Rand, you could not look Rand in the face and say, oh, well, maybe that worked for you, but it wouldn't work for me because blah, 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 blah. And Rand will be like, no, I've built a career on this. Shut up. And CJ, same thing. I couldn't look at him and say, that it wouldn't work. And CJ would say, you have a fine show. You have great promo materials. There's literally no way it can't work. And I think that once you get more degrees of separation away, it becomes mm-hmm. easier to tell yourself things like, well, maybe that worked for him, but that doesn't work for everybody, you know, that kind of stuff.
And I would say that some of the hardest work we ever do comes out of desperation. Some of the hardest work comes out of it's like, you know, when what was your drive when you realized you were going to get married? What was your drive like when Bonnie's like, hey, Brian, you know, isn't 3 a fun number?
Well, 3 might not be the best example since we tried to call back C's and it was too late. But getting married was certainly one of those things where it was, she said, if there's a reason I shouldn't be applying to graduate schools in the Northeast, I need to know right now. And then
it gets cold up there.
Yeah, right. Well, and it took me a moment to realize, oh, wait, I get it. But
well,
certainly,
let's start with the war of Northern aggression.
Yeah. but as far as fear is a very powerful motivator. I mean, fear does some real magic. And I don't know. Is that the answer you're looking for?
I was looking at that. Some of the best things I've learned came from people who were, you know, were like, they weren't in comfort zones. They were like, they had to get that stuff done. They had to get it done. And they couldn't sit around and be like, I'm not motivated. They were forced to be in that situation. And a lot of times we're in comfort zones trying to replicate things, and it's easier for us to give up. But
specifically, like, for example, and you know the pressure of once you've accepted a booking, especially when it's for, you know, more money than you made in an entire month at your previous job. It's like, finally, I'm making grown-up professional touring ass magician money, and you land, and even though you know, have a reservation number with budget rent a car, you land in Nashville. This is all just totally hypothetical. And you get down there and they say, yeah, sorry, we don't have a car for you. Then you pick up the phone and you call your manager, and right there in front of the guy, you make sure to say, hey, Mike, the gig is in jeopardy. Is there a U-Haul somewhere nearby so that I can rent a U-Haul so I can physically make it the 2.5 hours to do the show that happens in 5 hours from now? I mean, like, when you have no choice but to pull it off, you get real creative real fast. And in this case, you know, just listening to the fact that, you know, this wasn't some guy on a vacation they were screwing over. They were jeopardizing my livelihood. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, the guy was like, oh, you know what? One just came out. If you don't mind a bigger car, we could get you in one right away.
Oh my God, dude. Assholes. If somebody did that to me, that would be a literal fist fight. That would be like somebody trying to reach up my wife's skirt. Like that is a personal offense. If they were trying to avoid giving you an upgraded car and told you that they didn't have one, that's a spin kick.
I agree, but also all of it's irrelevant because like a bigger car, smaller car, whatever, none of that was gonna get me to the gig, you know. But a U-Haul would have, you know.
Oh no! I mean no. Yeah, I'm this is inside, you know, business.
Sure, 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 sure.
Like knowing that like what their issues are to bring them to say things like that. But at the same time, you're right. I mean, you know, when I was doing the Go game, you know, there would be upwards of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on the line for me to do something. And it didn't matter. All that money didn't care if the actors I hired sucked or that the tech went down or that there was any other reason why legitimately I could go tell somebody else in my profession or even beyond that, a layperson, exactly everything that happened, and they would say, oh my God, that's a real bad beat. In that moment, you either have to fix it or have so much effort expelled that nobody around you could ever question anything other than this was a total lost cause and an act of God.
Exactly. Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's like if you are going to go down, you're going to go down, you know, fighting. You're going to go down gambling and destroying everything in your path. But a lot of that during that time was when I learned little phrases that I still use today. Like if something needed to happen, there were times that it was so desperate that after waiting 30 minutes on a phone queue, human being I spoke to, I got their name and I was like, Janet, I am not kidding you. I need a superhero to save the day. There is a real situation and only you can solve this. And then, you know, the moment you say that, you set the scenario and it's amazing. People like to be the hero. They want to save the day. They want to help you solve the problem. But most of us forget that in our annoyance, because I could have just as easily, the moment Janet got on the phone, said, you know what? My dad was a man. My grandfather was a man of commitment and integrity. And if he told me I would have a car, I'd have a car. What's with you guys? You know, and it's like, my guess is I wouldn't have made the gig if that's how I talked.
Oh yeah, you're already an adversary,
yeah.
You're not an ally, and that's like I've watched this where, you know, I ate a lot of fast food, and I watch the person who goes up to the counter and goes, you guys screwed up, you know, and they're like already they're defensive,
yeah,
they're like, well, let me see your receipt, let me see this because you've just told me that I failed, you know, and you've made me feel bad. Where I go up there and like I messed up on my order and like I think I wanted to get this, and they look at it and they'll go, oh. No, you didn't. No, we messed up. It's okay, you know. Or I'm like, hey, can you help me out? I apologize for being pushy or whatever. You know, is this cool? And then give them the higher ground. I give them the, hey, no, you're cool. You did great. You know, I messed up or whatever.
Have we ever talked about this on After Thing about the After Things about the power that comes with of asserting no power? I think there's more power to get things done when you roll over on your belly than any other posture.
I do that where, like, if I'm on phone support and it's frustrating, I get that part, I'll do like, hey, I apologize. I'm really confused. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. And because that's the story they go home and they feel good about helping out.
Yeah. Well, and also I figured out real fast in those situations, never, ever, ever ask a yes, no question. And certainly if you're going to move in that direction, make sure not to ask a question where it's easier to say no than to say yes. It's like step one is get a foot in the door, learn their name, explain your name, set up, like, just ask for a small gift. Can I give you 30 seconds to explain what's going on? And then you probably know way better than me how to handle this. So you start with a bargain. They've now committed to 30 seconds of listening. You're like, great. Okay, I've done this, this, and that. My job is on the line to accomplish this goal. And then I don't even ask, can you please do X, Y, or Z? I then ask, if you were me, how would you handle this? Because because now what you've effectively done, if you said, here are all the parameters to this, what would you do? And you know, still, you might get a jerk who is like, well, I don't know, I probably would have bought the insurance 6 months ago. In which case, yeah. In which case,
I don't have a time machine.
But at which point the immediate answer becomes, oh, I get it. You're not the person I'm supposed to be talking to. Can you hand me to literally anyone other than you? Great. Now let's start the whole game over again.
Here, JC Calhoun in the chat room says, I tried this and it never worked. I tried to get a $20 late fee on a $5 credit card bill waived, and I threatened to cancel my card. And they were like, okay, we can cancel that card for you.
No, just be... That's not... You didn't...
to threaten.
You're literally doing the opposite of everything we're advising. It's literally... the opposite. You tried to meet force with force. Bruce Lee is crying in Chinese heaven at you right now. I don't know. What? Was he Japanese, Chinese?
He was Chinese. He was born in Seattle.
That's right. In Seattle heaven. He's crying in Seattle heaven.
Same high school as Jimi Hendrix.
Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, him and Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix, they're all fist bumping saying, what a way to screw up.
But since we don't have a time machine... What should he do in the future?
In the future, you don't ask them to do anything. You explain. You number one, get permission to unload your situation. Do I have your permission to explain what's happened so far so I can ask for your advice? That's something very easily that people will do. The moment they say yes, you then get to explain your whole situation. Because they've already given you that permission. Then you say, and as you explain everything, you explain the situation you're in, what you can and cannot do, and you say, with all that in mind, again, you hand them, you say, if you were me, what would you do? And then they can't say, they can't invoke a time machine, they can't say, I would have done something different or whatever. You find yourself... on the same team, your allies. Make that person an ally. Arguing over a $5 fee or a $20 fee, that's not making them an ally. Don't do that.
And there are situations where they can't. They can't do anything. There are some situations where they can't. And also, like, if you're threatening to cancel, like, also, we agreed that if you're threatening to cancel a credit card where you only have a $5 charge on it, you're not worthwhile to them anyways. You know, it's like, yeah, we're not making money on you. We're losing money every time you call us kind of thing. And that's something too. It's like, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, but if you try it and it doesn't work and it's like, screw this, I'm never going to do that again. Well, you're never going to come out ahead.
Hey, by the way, real quick, just because some people haven't listened to every episode of everything we've ever talked about, the whole Bruce Lee thing is never meet force with force. Always take that force and redirect it off to the side. If you're arguing over a $20 late fee or whatever, you're trying to meet force with force, and that's not going to go very well.
Well, Jade says, for the record, I was nice. I didn't get mad, but...
Nothing. Those don't count.
I will cancel this if you don't waive it, because I can be very nice. I'm very... But if you do this, it's not being nice.
You're establishing a power dynamic and then leaning on it.
Being nice is irrelevant. Mad is nothing that deserves an award.
Basically, you are saying that we are the customers and we pay your salaries, Miss or Mister. And if you don't do this thing for me, then you'll have one less penny in your pocketbook. I'll take my ball and leave.
You threaten to cancel when you're a valuable customer, and like not a customer, a valuable customer. You know, if I have one bank account that's got $20,000 in it, and I got another one that's got $200 in it, I'm going to get a very different reaction when I call up the different banks and say, can we do this, do this? Because one bank, they know exactly how much money they're making, and they know what they're making in fees. And I've had fees waived on stuff because like they're, you know, accounts with high amounts of fees and stuff. And they know if I'm unhappy, I move, that they lose a couple $1,000s a year. And that's, but if they know, well, yeah, we're going to lose $12 this year on this one. It's like, why does Google not have a customer service number?
Because they're smart, because they know that it's nothing but trouble.
All right, so here, let me ask you this, because there's a lot of people who do want to solve force with force. Mark's Drunken Gaming says, okay, but how useless do they have to be when it is time to launch from all cannons?
It is literally,
when do you unload?
It is literally never time to launch from all cannons. Let's say they're the biggest asshat in the world, in which case you continue to ask questions, you get their name, you get you're like, hey, just in case we get disconnected, what's the best way to reach you directly? You ask all the questions. The person asking the questions is the one in charge of the conversation. The worst case scenario you will ever have is to ask a number of questions that end up with them crossing the line, them saying something inappropriate. You have a record, hopefully a recorded record, if you're in a position to do that in your state. Then you call literally anyone else and say, hey, guys, I know it's not the position of megabank.corp to do this, but I had something really messed up happen. Do you have just 90 seconds to hear what happened? Because I think it might have been illegal or egregious or whatever. And then they'll say yes, and now you own them for 90 seconds, and you get them invested in your story, and you say, and then they said this. Is that really what this company does? Is that really it? And of course the answer is no. They're going to escalate it to somebody who's not currently fired up in the minute. Trust me, there's not a single person who you ever speak to on the phone in any of these situations who loves being the guy you're talking on the phone to. And with that in mind, you got to figure out how to get them on your team.
Yep. And yeah, being, you know, wanting to know when you can unload, that's not, if that's in the back of your mind, you're not coming across as sincere as you may feel you are. And I've been there. I've been there where, you know, I just want to yell at somebody. I just want to argue with somebody. And a lot of people walk through there all day. And if somebody's doing customer service all day, they're getting yelled at all the time. And I have, like, I think about a lot of restaurants or fast food places I look at, and it's almost like they have battered wife syndrome, you know, where they're so used to people yelling at them that they're not used to somebody being very kind. And it takes them a moment to realize that, this person's being nice or complimentary or whatever when I'm doing phone service, you know. And it's like, you know, if they give you the bad news, I've had people like give me bad, like, oh, I'm sorry, we can't do this. I'm like, okay, I appreciate you doing everything you can. I understand. And they'll be like, well, let me check one more thing, you know, because I didn't yell at them. I wasn't passive aggressive, which is a problem a lot of people have, is like, I'm friendly as long as I'm getting my way. But the moment I don't, I'm aggressive, and people pick up on that.
I remember one time, and I can't remember the intricacies, and they'd be boring if I did, but I was going on a flight to Hawaii for the Go game, and I wanted to see if I could upgrade my seats. But because of when you could use your upgrades and what time it was, I believe I was on the East Coast at the time. Like, I was in this weird window where I was like an hour or 2 hours away from being able to check in and use these upgrades. And so I just kept calling United to, like, just ask and see. And, like, I had this whole big complicated thing in my head where I was going to move my flight to an earlier flight. So technically I would already be within the 24-hour window so I could check in to the other flight. And then I could move that flight back afterward. And so I just was calling United and I was like, hey, I got this weird thing. And I'm, like, halfway through explaining my idea. And this lady's like, wait, what do you want to do? She's like, I'm like, well, ultimately, I want to check in for this flight and see if I could use my upgrades. But it's before 24 hours right now, so I can't. She's like, just hold on.
Yes.
It's done.
So remember.
Like, and that was it.
Water takes the path of least resistance. All these people do is deal with water and just make sure that of all their options, they could try to dam it up, they could try to hand it off to somewhere else. Make sure that it's their decision to say, I like this guy. It sounds like he really has a tough situation. I know I'm not supposed to grant this favor every single time that the phone rings, but in this situation, the easiest way for me to deal with it is to just bleep, blop, bloop, congratulations, enjoy first class. There.
You know, this was something that really was hard ingrained in me as a reporter, because nobody wants to talk to a reporter, and nobody specifically wants to talk to a college reporter. And that's where I learned how to do it. and where a lot of people wanted to go the opposite route and be very, very, like, you know,
right,
suit and tie and nice and, you know, shower and not look like some degenerate C student who was, you know, up until 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, smoking pot and listening to the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack. I kind of went the other way because I would rather them be the 19-year-old that they want to help do a favor than somebody who's trying to act like they're 25 or 30 and they're 10 years in the business.
And weirdly, so there's more power in being that guy. Like,
absolutely.
Like, yeah.
110%. I got more stuff out of more people. I had more of a collegial relationship with them because, you know, part of it, I mean, this is kind of the next level on this, is understanding not only who you are, but how others look at you, and then realizing where the power dynamics are and where you can disarm people so they're less defensive about stuff. But, you know, for me as a reporter, the goal was A, try to become as close to the people that I was talking to on a regular basis as possible. B, for people that I was a stranger to, try to make my interaction with them as painless as possible. And then make sure I write a good story, but not be careless about what we're writing about, right? You know, and that was a lesson that was learned kind of as we went along. But a lot of that can go with any kind of interaction. I had to make those calls because we had to write a story that had to get to bed before 11 o'clock so it could make the next day's paper. Newspapers are a fictional thing that used to happen, kids. Don't worry. Just believe me. But if you are in other situations, these dynamics are still here. You're still the poor wretch from the street that powerful, powerful, powerful customer service person can make better, as opposed to everybody else that's going to call in and say, hey, I'm Busy McGee, and you're a poor-ass a jerk butt, and it's your problem that my car's not here.
The magic phrase that I lean on very heavily, and there's some version of it that you could feel honest about and say yourself, is you within 10 seconds say, hello, Justin. I am assuming their name is Justin. I say, Justin, I am 2 hours into this, and I just need a superhero to save the day. Can I just explain what's going on, and then maybe you have a prescription to help me? Like people want to be the hero, and then if those are literally the first words out of your mouth was like, how'd you like to be a superhero? I'm gonna guess most people are gonna say that sounds fun.
And you gotta wear a cape, and then I've mentioned before, like, it has to be a policy. If you only get your way, you only get the free upgrade or whatever 10% of the time or 20% of the time, you're coming out 10 or 20% ahead. You just have to get used for 80% of the time them saying no and being cool with it and rolling with it. And sometimes the fact that once you know you're cool with no matter the outcome and you'll be fine and you'll polite or whatever, it actually affects your pregame. It actually affects the way you are before, and people can pick up on that, and that it's not just an act.
And understand also, like, a lot of people on the phone think that once they say no, their conversation gets to be over. But you're the one who decides when the conversation's over. If they say no, I will not get you those flowers by 4 o'clock, no questions asked, it's not possible. You're like, okay, all right, well then, in that case, I need to write an explanation of what happened. You said your name was Janet, right? Okay, let's write this letter together to my wife that we're going to do to explain why the flowers aren't there at 4 o'clock. And it's like, she don't get to hang up. She ain't done just because she said she was going to fail at some part of her job. She's still on the job to help you because, again, get to the point where it's easier to grant your wish than it is to deal with you on the phone anymore.
Yeah, Kyle Hume points out, remember the name of the person, because it's also helpful in using their name, not just later on, well, so-and-so said this. But I see this a lot where I watch people go up there and like, hey, can you do me a favor in this? And I'm like, this person thinks they're charming. This person thinks they're being likable, but it's an act and it's condescending, and that everybody sees through this. Yet that person walks away thinking like, yeah, no, I was really polite and sweet with her and all that. Like, no, you were a condescending, passive-aggressive person who has no idea what sincerity is.
Sure, sure.
And that's
I mean, I'm not saying do it badly. I'm saying do it good.
Oh, yeah, we'll be sincere. I mean, it's just like you try to care about that person.
But Kim from Chicago points out that CSR is like they don't have the right to hang up on the customer. That's a no-no. That's a job no-no. They could be super annoying and get the customer to hang up first, but there's an awful lot as a customer you could get done before that point comes. And plus, and also, a lot of them, they got turnover expectations. They're supposed to hit so many calls an hour. The longer if they feel like they can solve this in 3 minutes by doing their job rather than argue for 30 minutes, it is in their own best interest to solve it in 3 minutes by doing their job.
Yep.
You know, I'll tell you what, the one thing I would leave on with this is, and this is probably a good, just like what Andrew said, just stuff to understand that will make your life better. Is to understand like what are the human elements of a conversation. Like what when you're having a conversation, what puts you at ease? What's the difference between your conversation with your best friend with a stranger on the street? And think of those signals, right? Not about the history. It's like, oh, well, I've known this person forever. But literally just the cadence, the words, you know, the things that go back and forth between you and the people that you are closest to. And then think about that in contrast to how you talk to a stranger. And I will guarantee you that there is a gap that if you close fractionally will make your life a better place.
You know what? This kind of segues in perfectly to talking about picks. If you haven't read it, and both of these are stuff I mentioned before, but back in the 1980s, Robert Cialdini wrote a book called Influence that was very, very good. I think in some ways his new book, Persuasion, is possibly even better because he talks about the incredible power of getting people to assert that they are a certain type of person before the discussion even begins. If you're on the phone, and this might be a seemingly hostile way to get things started, but even if as a joke you're to say like, you're like, oh, Janet, been on hold a long time. Just got to know, are you the kind of person that can like save the day? Or are you the kind of person that's going to hand me off to someone else? And you know, it's a joke moment. And she'll say, well, I'm here to save the day. Great. That little moment has huge impacts. It shapes the way she will decide the rest of the conversation goes because people love being consistent. They hate saying one thing and then turning out to be less than what they say they are. And persuasion is filled with all that stuff. Everything from how book reviews go forward. It's amazing.
Buying it right now, the book version, the print version.
I did.
By the way, did you see Amazon opening up a bookstore in Manhattan?
Yes.
Interesting.
It's two they've got now. Fast. Yeah. Two in the last 4 years. Fast on their way to building a. It'd be interesting. Actually, I'm gonna find out if I can do like a book signing there.
That's what it's there for, right? To recognize anybody that works with them and say like, hey, look, don't worry, you dusty jacketed old print folks. We'll still do everything in the beautiful glittering new digital future. We'll have bookstores and people will pay a nickel to see these book buyers.
Amazon Prime for free. Justin, do you have a pick?
Here's something that I didn't even know existed, and I'm shocked. Prime restaurants. What? You guys know about Prime restaurants?
What?
No.
0-2? Me too. And I'm blown away because I use the hell out of everything. It's basically...
The fudge. Have you heard about these Prime restaurants?
Is this like Prime Rib?
Amazon Prime.
It's food delivery. It's like Instacart.
Free delivery.
Oh, okay.
From all these restaurants. It's a lot of the same place, at least in Oakland, that we normally wind up ordering from anyway. Now you just don't have to pay a delivery fee. And that's, you know, that's better than Postmates. It's better than ordering it right from there or DoorDash or anything like that. No delivery fee. Great. I love it. And you can do it on your Echo.
Wow, I'm looking at this now. I had no idea. $20 order minimum. See, there's the problem when you live alone.
Hold on.
Yeah. That's the thing I run into a lot, too, is I have to buy, like, two meals worth, and then save one for later so I can hit the minimum.
How about then one of you guys can order for two and then mail it to the other one, and that way you'll save on a delivery.
With Prime shipping, it'll be free shipping.
Yeah. With Prime shipping, yes.
All right, I'm trying to punch in my my code.
You might not have it out here.
Yeah, we do not deliver to the boonies. Code. It's not great.
Yeah. Mm.
Maybe the warehouse. Hold on. Maybe the warehouse Maybe the is warehouse. Close enough. Nope.
Yeah. Andrew, did you have a pick?
I have a pick.
What's your pick?
My pick is... they asked Warren Buffett, when Warren Buffett's asked what was his favorite book, the best book he ever read that helped him for business. You guys know the answer to this?
Richest Man in Babylon.
No.
Redfish, Bluefish.
Spiro and the Fudge's Deep Sea Diving Guide for Dummies.
We know that's what he meant to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
So good. It's so good, and it's even better knowing how timeless it is, you know, the fact that these and some of it, what's funny is some of the advice ceased to be relevant with the age of Facebook giving you reminders on birthdays or whatever. That's one of the things he says is everyone you ever meet, put you know, find out their birthday, put it on your calendar because there's literally nobody that doesn't love getting a personal phone call on their birthday or whatever. Nowadays, you know, Facebook kind of ruins it because it tells you automatically, oh, it's so.
Although I'll tell you, I think we're getting back to that being valuable.
Correct.
Because now so many people are on Facebook that, like, I don't tell everybody I know happy birthday, even though Facebook reminds me.
Right. Well, and I if you can avoid using that method. Like, if you're reminded by Facebook, pick up the phone, call them, send a text message. Say, like, hey, man, wow, can you believe we've known each other 7 years? You're really great. I hope you have a great birthday. Like, that stuff matters. It's good. It's great.
Phone calls are powerful. Phone calls are good. I've had somebody that's like, phone calls, why would you do it in this day and age? It's exactly why you do it in this day and age.
Exactly. If I could, I'd send them telegrams, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I will say my phone, primarily, 90% of it is taken up talking to the two of you guys and Ashley. Like, you guys are the three most important people in my life. So, it as a barometer, look at that.
Brian, how do we feel about having Ashley put into that circle there?
So. Yeah, man, we if I remember the story correctly, we had one kettlebell left, one Turkish kettlebell.
I had this opportunity on the way over. I was talking to a friend on the phone and, I said, we're talking, he's like, I don't go on Facebook anymore. I'm like, yeah, I don't really like to go there anymore because it's the people who are the most emotionally needy are the ones who are posting the most.
I post to Facebook. I don't ever.
I rest my case.
Ever read Facebook. And I tried reading my wife's Facebook because it was open in front. And, you know, each picture appeared to tell a piece of a story. And I found myself 30 minutes later having gotten like I kept going because of that monkey random reinforcement. Like, well, maybe this next one will be good. And then I just threw down her phone and I was like, dead to me.
I don't want to go into rant. We want to go out of here. But Facebook, any social media things, they have algorithms that are designed to get you sucked in there. They will put posts there that may make you angry, that make you want to comment. They are trying to pull your attention in there. You are in a arms race with billion-dollar AI technology designed to capture your attention, stoke your little dopamine triggers, and to get you engaged.
Yep.
And the easiest way to play, according to War Games, the easiest way to win is to not to play.
And they're not above being desperate. I didn't use Facebook much either. And at some point, it noticed I wasn't interacting with anybody and it didn't have anything to tell me. So once a day, at some point, it would be like, hey, someone commented on this photo that you did not look at and did not like and barely know.
Really?
Yeah, it gets really desperate.
For me, the way it gets desperate is passive aggressive. As if we're having a conversation, it's like, hey, do you know Joe Bloggs? I'm just asking. Yep. Joe Bloggs. Is that a guy you know? No? Okay.
Yep. I'm
You know Jim Turtley do? to Jim Turtley do? He's a guy. You don't know him? Okay, all right, all right.
And I know Ken Turtledy Doo is a good. He went to college with me.
Really? Hold on, let me write that down. Ken Turtledy Doo.
People are like, oh, hey, I sent you a Facebook Messenger thing, and it's like, yeah, if you like me, you won't do that, and it's hard because some people just natural for them, and it's like, no, I'm not anti tech. I'm anti this thing that's a time sink designed to suck up all my time. In
I'll tell you what, man. There is. I know it is a measurably less effective social media platform, but God, do I love the ephemeral nature of Twitter. It's just a giant chat room. Just
Twitter's
chit-chatting,
beautiful.
Chit-chat.
Twitter's beautiful for the reasons that Facebook is evil.
Yes. Yep.
You know, and the reason Twitter, like Facebook has this $400 billion valuation and Twitter's got, you know, if that 10% of that, but part of the reason is because, yeah, Twitter's, I hop in, I have a chat, I do a Periscope, it's great, I turn it off, I go away.
Kip from Chicago points out that Twitter will email you if it hasn't heard from you for a while, like suggesting things to you.
Twitter will create new categories of emails and automatically add you to them. Because I will get emails occasionally from old inactive accounts that's like, hey, here are the new celebrity tweets for this thing you did 4 years ago.
I got really into making fake Twitter accounts, then I would always use, you know, you could always add like plus extra characters on your Gmail, but they all end up going to Gmail. And so like one of them is Josh Connolly was complaining how he looked fat or something, whatever. So I made an account called Fat Josh. And so,
every couple of months you get, hey, Fat Josh,
I made another one. Like somebody was complaining about dubstep. And I was like, well, when I invented dubstep, it's like, William H. Dubstep, you've been missing out on these.
I did that when Chris Kenner lost his wallet. I created Kenner's wallet. And it was like just photos from all over Vegas of what the money was being spent on and what I was doing, and now I get Kenner's wallet.
That's amazing. You're like, did you follow Kanye? You won't believe what he said.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.